A magpie's nest. Lou. Le Presage. I'd heard the name once, spoken amidst breathless giggles at the maypole. Another witchling had suggested we seek it out, as we twirled and danced in the sweltering midsummer heat. Manon had refused, repeating a story her mother had told her about Melusine drowning unsuspecting witchlings. We'd all believed it at the time. Melusine were bloodthirsty, after all, treacherous and uncanny. The boogeyman hiding beneath our beds, or in our backyard, as was actually the case. Some days I'd been able to see the mist from their shore through my window at sunrise. It wasn't until I'd first played with Coco that I'd realized Melusine posed no real threat. They held dominion over an entire world below, a world apart from the rest of us, greater and stranger than our own. They had little interest in the affairs of witches. Until now, it seemed. I shot surreptitious looks at the black waters as we trudged along the footpath. They twined beneath Reed, towing him forward, while more water flooded the path behind, forcing us deeper along the seafloor. Within the waves on either side, shadows moved, some small and innocuous, and others alarming in their size and dexterity. Beau appeared to share my disquiet. He nearly clipped my heel in his haste to flee the serpentine faces pressing in on the pathway.
"Fish women, eh?" he muttered at my ear.
"Legend says they could once walk on land, but I've never seen it in my lifetime." He gave a full-body shudder.
"I don't like fish."
Another silver face flashed through the waters, sticking her forked tongue out at him. Angelica glanced over her shoulder as she continued to glide forward.
"Whatever you do, do not insult them. They're incredibly vain, Melusine, but never vapid. They value beauty almost as much as gentility. Manners are of utmost importance to Melusine, but they have vicious tempers when provoked."
At Beau's alarmed expression, Coco added, "They love flattery. You'll be fine."
"Flattery?"
Beau nodded seriously to himself, tucking the knowledge away.
"Right.
Are they very beautiful, then?"
Celia asked, clutching her leather satchel over her shoulder with both hands. Dirt was caked beneath her cracked nails, and her hair spilled haphazardly from her chignon. Blood and grime stained her porcelain skin, the once rich velvet of her trousers. The lace trim at her sleeves now trailed gently behind her in the wind.
"Since they value beauty."
"They are."
Angelica inclined her head with an almost impish smile.
"They are not, however, human. Never forget that, child. Beautiful things can have teeth."
Celie frowned at the words, but said nothing more, and Angelica turned her attention instead to Coco, who studiously ignored her. She stared at her daughter for a long moment, deliberating, before clearing her throat.
"Are you well, Cosette? Have your own injuries healed?"
"It's Coco."
She glared at a beautiful fish flitting past, its golden fins rippling behind it.
"And I've survived worse."
"That isn't what I asked."
"I know what you asked."
An awkward moment passed before Angelica spoke again.
"Are you warm enough?"
"I'm fine."
Then another.
"Your hair looks lovely, I must say." She tried again.
"Look how long it's grown."
"I look like a drowned rat."
"Nonsense. You could never look like a rat."
"Though you do look a bit peaky," Beau interjected helpfully. "A bit limp."
They both turned cold gazes upon him, and he shrugged, not at all contrite. When they turned away once more, I elbowed him in the ribs, hissing,
"You ass."
"What?"
He rubbed the spot ruefully.
"That's likely the first time they've ever agreed on something. I'm trying to help."
After a handful more feeble attempts at conversation, which Coco shut down with an ease and efficiency I admired, Angelica cut straight to the heart of it.
"We have a long walk ahead of us to Le Presage, daughter. I should like to know you better, if you are willing."
Coco scoffed and kicked an algae-covered rock. It plunked into the water, splashing my ruined hem.
"Why? You said you'd been watching me. You should already know everything."
"Perhaps. I don't know your thoughts, however."
Angelica tilted her head to the side, lips pursed, as if debating something. After another few seconds, she said,
"I don't know why you wear my necklace, for example."
Subtle as a brick.
I wonder what that's like, Coco mused bitterly, still watching the golden fish. Wanting an explanation and never receiving one. It'd be horribly frustrating, don't you think?
Angelica didn't force any more horrendously awkward conversation after that. As for myself, I tried not to think. Angelica had said Reed's injuries weren't fatal. She said he would wake. And Isla, though I knew little about the mysterious woman they called the Oracle, she would make a powerful ally against Morgane and Josephine. With our other allies occupied, it made sense to indulge Isla. Josephine clearly feared her. I didn't know how much time passed before my heels began to ache. It could have been moments, it could have been hours. One second, the moon shone directly overhead, limning Reed's silhouette in silver. And the next, it had dipped below a wall of water, bathing us all in shadow. Only then did I notice the strange phosphorescent glow emanating from the waters.
What is that? I whispered.
A special kind of plankton, Angelica said, her voice equally soft. Though here we call them sea stars. They light the waters around the city. The bluish glow reflected in Celie's wide eyes. She reached out to the wall nearest us, where thousands of nearly indiscernible specks of light swirled together to form one bright, pulsing wave.
They're like fireflies.
Angelica smiled and nodded, lifting her chin for us to look down the footpath. What appeared to be a golden gate bisected it, colossal and ornate, expanding into the empty plains of water on either side and rising to the sky. If not for the algae growing along its whorls and spikes, it could have been the gate to heaven. Beyond it, there seemed to be no water at all.
Behold, le presage.
Angelica's smile widened as we drew to a unanimous halt.
And there, in the center, le palais de cristal.
We all stared, necks craned, at the orb of dry, mountainous terrain in the heart of L'Eau Mélancolique. Huts had been carved into the rock along the city's edge, into the very mountainside, as the seafloor rose to one tumultuous peak. At the top of that peak, spires of sea glass rose, cruel and sharp and beautiful, from the ruins of an enormous sunken ship. Its broken masts and shredded sails glowed blue in the light of the sea stars.
Is that dry land?
Beau glanced from Coco to me and back again in search of an explanation, but Coco didn't seem to notice. Her mouth had parted slightly as she gazed up at the city, and her free hand had risen to grasp her locket once more.
I remember this place, she breathed.
Those dark eyes sought mine, brimming with sudden certainty, with hope. Grinning, I released her arm and she took a stumbling step forward.
I've been here before. Le presage.
She said the words as if tasting them, returning my smile. Her anger, her resentment momentarily forgotten. Memory was a strange and wonderful thing.
The Oracle City. Le Palais de Cristal.
Angelica shadowed her movements, close enough to touch. She still didn't dare.
You were born there.
Coco whirled to face her, nearly breathless in her anticipation, and the dam finally burst.
How? How was I born here if you can't leave? Is my father a merman? Is my father Constantine? Why is the Oracle City built on dry land? How is there dry land in the middle of the wistful waters?
Angelica laughed at Coco's outburst. It really did sound like bells, and gestured us onward toward the gate. The sea stars followed in our wake. Though they didn't speak, though I could hardly see them, they seemed almost curious, sprite-like.
It isn't always dry, she said. I told you, Melusine are courteous to a fault. They wouldn't want their guests to feel uncomfortable.
So they drained their entire city? Beau asked incredulously. Just for us to breathe?
Even Angelica's shrug articulated elegance and grace.
Why not?
Does that mean they can walk on land?
I asked, sticking a finger into the waters on impulse. The sea stars clustered around my knuckle, illuminating the shape of my bone through my skin. I flexed it in fascination, watching as they swirled and eddied, desperate to touch me. They left a cold, tingling sensation in their wake. Angelica's smile vanished, and she slapped my hand away.
Stop it!
She lifted my finger to eye level, revealing thousands of tiny blood-red pricks.
teeth marks. They'll eat you if you let them.
I snatched my hand away with an outraged sound, wiping my blood on my chemise and glaring at the carnivorous little beasts.
And we are not on land, she continued, resolute. Make no mistake. We remain on the seafloor, where Melusine are free to grow legs.
Grow legs?
Beau's face twisted in disgust as a handful of humanoid shadows swam toward us from along the gate, their metallic tails flashing. I inched closer to Reed.
Like frogs?
Angelica's expression grew stony as the Melusine's faces took shape through the waters. Three women and two men. Though their bodies ranged in shape, from broad and coarse to fine and delicate, they all seemed somewhat longer than human, as if their limbs had been stretched, and each moved with a sort of liquid grace. Their colors varied from the palest of silver to the deepest of ebony, but all shimmered slightly, monochromatic and dusted with pearlescent scales. Their webbed fingers wrapped around what could only be described as spears, perhaps tridents. Whatever they were, they gleamed wickedly sharp in the phosphorescent light, and I had no interest in meeting the receiving end of them.
Beau,
I murmured, smiling pleasantly at their hostile faces as they swam closer, closer still.
Apologize, you blithering idiot.
He backed into me, nearly breaking my foot. I stomped on his toes in return. He swore roundly, snarling,
They couldn't have heard me.
Coco spoke through her own fixed smile, imitating Seeley, who curtsied low and elbowed Beau when he didn't do the same.
Good idea. Let's risk it.
It was an honest question.
The Menacine didn't pause at the walls of water, instead gliding seamlessly through them and stepping onto the footpath, their split tails transforming to legs before our very eyes. The scales on their fins disappeared, and glistening skin wrapped around feet, ankles, calves, thighs, and... A beat of silence passed as Beau's alarm promptly vanished, replaced by a wide, shit-eating grin. They were naked. And contrary to Angelica's assertion, they looked very human. Seeley gasped.
Bonjour, mademoiselle,
Beau said to the one in front, bending to kiss her long-fingered hand. He hesitated for only a second when he saw she had one extra knuckle per finger. Each clenched around her spear as she pointed it at his face, hissing and revealing a pair of thin fangs.
You dare to touch me without permission?
The male nearest her lifted his trident to emphasize her words. Unlike the female, he wore a thick golden rope around his neck, its emerald pendant the size of a goose egg. Matching twin emeralds glittered at his tapered ears.
He likened us to amphibians as well.
When he tilted his head, the movement was predatory. His silver eyes glittered with menace.
Do we appear as amphibians?
Angelica swept into a deep, immaculate curtsy.
He meant no offense, Aurelien.
Beau lifted placating hands, nodding along hastily.
I meant no offense.
The female slanted her black eyes at him. Against her narrow silver face and her long, long silver hair, they appeared disconcerting and far too large. Indeed, everything about her and her kin's features seemed disproportionate somehow. Not wrong, exactly, just strange, striking. Like a beautiful portrait meant to be studied, not admired. She didn't lower her weapon.
Yet still I hear no apology. Does the human prince think us ugly? Does he think us strange?
Yes. The answer rose to my lips unbidden, but I bit my tongue at the last second, frowning and averting my gaze. The movement attracted the Melusine's attention, however, and those black eyes turned to me, flicking over the planes of my face, studying me. She grinned with dark cunning, and my stomach dropped with realization.
The women who dwell here are truth-tellers. Drink of the waters and spill their truth.
Oh, God. Beau, who'd quashed his own answer with a strangled sound, cast me a panicked look. I returned it full measure. If we couldn't lie, if we'd been forced into a kingdom of literal truth. If he didn't kill us, I certainly would. Either way, we'd all be dead by night's end. Beau tried to speak again, keeping his eyes trained carefully on the Melusine's face. His throat bobbed against the tip of her spear.
Of course you do not look like a frog, mademoiselle, and I am grievously sorry for the implication. Indeed, you are quite...
The lie stuck in his throat, and his mouth gaped open and closed, like the fish who'd gathered to watch our inevitable demise.
Quite.
Lovely, Celie finished, her voice earnest and firm. You are lovely. The Menacine regarded Celie with open curiosity, and the silver-haired female slowly lowered her spear. Beau swallowed visibly as she inclined her head. The others followed suit, some bowing deeply, others curtsying. The one called Aurélien even extended his hand to her, pressing an emerald earring into her palm.
You are welcome here, Celie Tremblay. The silver-haired Melusine's lip curled as she glanced back at Beau. More so than your companions.
Celie curtsied again, smaller this time. I am pleased to make your acquaintance, mademoiselle.
I am Elvire, the Oracle's hand.
The Melusine smiled in approval at Celie's impeccable manners, and another of her companions looped a strand of pretty white pearls around Celie's neck. They looked ridiculous against her tattered gown, but Celie didn't seem to mind.
Thank you.
She lifted a hand in surprise, stroking them gently before pushing the single emerald stud through her pierced earlobe. She looked like a magpie.
I shall treasure each one.
Beau stared at her incredulously.
They suit you.
Elvire nodded before gesturing toward her companions.
We are here to escort you into the Oracle City. This is Aurélien.
She pointed to the bejeweled but otherwise naked merman.
Olympienne.
Another mermaid, this one the palest lavender, with diamonds adorning her teeth.
Léopoldine.
A third, with thin golden chains sparkling along her charcoal torso.
La Simone and Sabaté.
She finished with two onyx mermen. One boasted rubies in his nipples, while the other's eyes glowed milky white. Seaweed wound through his braided hair.
We are simply enchanted to meet you. If you'd be so kind as to walk beside me, Mademoiselle Celie, I would much appreciate your company.
When Celie nodded, Elvire extended an arm, and the two joined elbows, as prim and polite as any two aristocrats strolling through the park in Caesarine. Sabaté gestured for Angelica and Coco to fall in behind them, while Léopoldine and La Simone flanked Reed on either side. Aurélien stepped in behind without a backward glance. Only his barnacle-crusted trident even glanced in our direction, waving us forward. And that was how Beau and I found ourselves at the rear of the procession into the city. Le Présage was unlike anything I'd ever seen. Just as I'd suspected, the Melusine lived like magpies, building their homes from the remnants of sunken ships, from coral, from stone, hoarding sunken treasure to decorate their windows and lawns. A weathered marble bust sank deep into the silt of a kelp-filled garden at the edge of the city. The owner had affixed diamonds to each eye. Farther in, officials ushered Melusine to the side of a bustling thoroughfare. Instead of brick or cobblestones, the road had been paved with mismatched coins, gold, silver, and bronze couronne, as well as foreign coinage I didn't recognize. The occasional gemstone, an errant shell.
Is it always this crowded? Beau asked, brows raised.
Scores of Melusine gathered to watch us pass, their eyes luminous and skin lustrous. Many wore gowns hundreds of years out of fashion, ostentatious and ornate, while others, like our guards, wore nothing at all. A merman with a bone necklace and pearl hood winked at me from afar. His companion had painted her entire body gold, donning only a fork in her intricately braided chignon. The only thing every Melusine had in common, it seemed, was their legs.
We have not walked for many years, Aurélien said as means of explanation.
From around the bend of the street, a team of sienna-colored octopi surged into view, pulling a gilded carriage behind. Except its paint had disintegrated in the salty water, and its wood had mostly rotted, caving in half the roof. Still, the Melusine nearest it clapped gleefully, and the couple inside, one wore a monocle for Christ's sake, waved as if royalty. And perhaps they were. Perhaps kings and queens in the world below owned octopi and carriages. Perhaps they also sewed shark teeth into veils and wore golden cutlery in their powdered wigs. The entire city glittered with the air of ludicrous opulence gone to seed. I adored it.
I want a wig.
I couldn't see enough as we marched past little shops of stone with planter boxes of red algae. One Melusine walked his pet spotted turtle on a gold-threaded leash. Another lounged in a claw-footed tub at the street corner, pouring water from a pitcher onto her legs. They transformed back into obsidian fins before our very eyes. Merchants hawked wares of everything from conch fritters and crab legs to oyster and pearl earrings and music boxes. The light of the sea stars undulated eerily across each face, the only illumination in the entire city. Why do Melusine's own wigs? And gowns, Coco asked, eyeing the couple nearest us. They both wore heavy trains of brocade velvet and corsets. Just corsets. No bodices, no chemises. How do you wear them with fins? Wouldn't skirts weigh you down in the water? Can a Melusine drown? I asked curiously. Olympienne tilted her lavender head between us in consideration. She pursed her lavender lips. Do not be silly. Of course Melusines cannot drown. We have gills. She bared her neck, revealing pearlescent slits along the side of her throat. And lungs. She inhaled deeply. But yes, unfortunately, such handsome attire can prove quite troublesome underwater. We have much anticipated your arrival for just this reason.
To wear dresses?
Beau frowned as a young boy strode past in scarlet breeches and billowing cloak. He bared sharp teeth at us.
You drained the entire city to wear dresses? We drained the city because we are courteous hosts, Le Simon said, his voice unexpectedly deep. That we should also wear our treasure is a pleasant inclusion.
Wear our treasure? Huh. It made sense. Where else would a Melusine trapped below water find such sumptuous clothing but sunken ships? Perhaps Le Simon's ruby nipple rings had come from the ship we approached at this very moment, splintered at the base of Le Palais de Cristal. How long does it take to drain an entire city? I peered down a darkened alley that seemed to drop straight into an abyss, where I swore I saw an enormous eye blink. And what's down there?
A giant squid. No, do not provoke it.
Aurelien steered me back onto the main road with the tip of his trident.
Isla foresaw your arrival months ago.
Sabaté tossed his braid over a sculpted shoulder and gestured for us to keep moving. The palace loomed directly ahead of us now.
From the moment you chose to marry the huntsman rather than flee or allow the authorities to lock you away.
Beau cleared his throat, glancing up at the waters far above. The sea star's reflection pulsed faintly in his dark eyes.
Yet Constantine was quite adamant that Celia and I not enter this place. Indeed, he said humans who drank of the waters would go mad.
Elvire looked at us from over her shoulder.
And did you drink of the waters?
I...
Beau frowned and looked at Celie.
Did we?
She shook her head slowly, brow creasing. I don't know. I did have a rather disturbing dream while unconscious, but I thought... Elvire patted her arm knowingly.
Dreams are never dreams, Mademoiselle Celie. They are our deepest wishes and darkest secrets made true, whispered only under cloak of night. In them, we are free to know ourselves.
Beau's skin appeared sallow in the ghostly light, and he swallowed, visibly disturbed.
I didn't speak any truth.
Elvire arched a silver brow.
Didn't you, Your Highness?
When he didn't answer, merely stared at her in confusion and dismay, she chuckled softly.
Never fear. You shall not go mad from it. You entered the waters under the Oracle's invitation, and she will protect your mind for the duration of your stay.
My own frown deepened as more guards lowered a rotten gangway for us to board the ship.
The only human entrance into Le Palais de Cristal,
Aurelien explained, prodding us forward. Tentatively, we followed the others atop the soft wood. It bowed beneath our weight. A buxom Melusine waited for us above, her silver hair elaborately coiffed, and her gray eyes clouded with age. Fine smile lines crinkled the corners of her mouth.
Bonsoir.
She greeted us with a deep curtsy, her train sparkling behind her on the deck. She wore no forks or monocles, instead looking every inch the consummate human aristocrat. Even the color and fabric of her gown, aubergine silk embellished with golden thread, would have been the height of fashion in Caesarine.
Welcome to the Palais de Cristal. I am Eglantine, the Oracle's personal handmaid and lady of this palace. I shall be attending you during your stay in our home.
With the same impeccable grace and innate confidence as Angelica, she turned toward the colossal doors to our left. By some miracle, water hadn't eroded the structure beyond. Perhaps the captain's quarters, as it had much of the quarterdeck. Some boards had splintered or rotted completely, leaving gaping holes through which candlelight flickered from below. Music, too. I strained to hear fragments of the haunting melody, but Aurélien prodded me forward once more, through the doors and onto a grand staircase. Covered in moldy carpet and lit by gilded candelabra, the stairs seemed to descend into the belly of the ship. I glanced at the crystal spires above our head.
Are we not going up? Guests are not permitted in the towers.
Aurélien poked me more insistently now.
Only the Oracle and her court inhabit them.
Are you part of her court, then? He puffed out his muscled chest, a peculiar shade between white and gray, like fog.
I am.
I patted his trident.
Of course you are.
Reluctantly fascinated, I followed Beau down the stairs. The walls had once been papered, but time and water had disintegrated all but scraps of the striped design. The carpet squelched softly underfoot.
When will we meet with Isla? I asked, grinning as Leopoldine trailed a long finger through the candle flame.
She drew back sharply a second later, examining the fresh burn there with a frown.
Will there be food?
Though the guard stiffened as if insulted by the question, Eglantine chuckled.
Of course there shall be food, as much as you could possibly eat.
My stomach rumbled its appreciation.
A special banquet has been prepared just for you. After you wash, we shall join Isla to dine.
Just her? Coco asked, eyes narrowed in suspicion. A knowing gleam entered Eglantine's eyes.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention how eager the entire court is to meet all of you, especially you, Cosette.
She winked at Coco in a conspiratorial fashion, and I decided instantly that I liked her.
Look how you've grown. You've always been beautiful, chérie, but I must say your breasts are an exquisite addition.
I definitely liked her. Coco straightened her shoulders in pride, or defiance, pushing said additions front and center as the guards prepared to leave us. To Celie, Elvire asked,
Won't you sit with us at tonight's feast, Mademoiselle Celie? We would so enjoy your company.
Celie blinked once, glancing between each of their hopeful faces, before smiling wide.
I would love that.
Excellent.
Olympienne flashed her diamond teeth while Leopoldine unclasped a golden chain from between her breasts, refastening it around Celie's waist. Sabaté tucked a strand of seaweed into her chignon, and Beau, Coco, and I, well, we all watched Celie become a bird's nest in unabashed bewilderment.
Until later, mon trésor.
They left us under Eglantine's watchful gaze.
Your chambers are just around the hall, one for each of you, of course, unless you and the human prince would like to share, Cosette.
Beau smirked as tension bolted down Coco's spine.
That won't be necessary, she said tersely.
Angelica turned away to hide her smile behind her hand.
Thank you. Very well. I shall leave you here.
Eglantine halted outside another decaying door. A burgundy curtain had been draped over the threshold, shielding the room from the hall.
This entire wing is completely your own.
She nodded to the other doors lining the way.
Ring the bells when you've finished with your wash, and I shall collect you. Might I bring anything else to make you more comfortable?
Celie reluctantly glanced at her ruined trousers.
Perhaps a clean nightgown?
Oh, how silly of me!
Eglantine brushed the burgundy curtain aside, pointing to the tarnished armoire beside a hammock of nets.
Each room has been stocked with clothing of all shapes and sizes, hand-selected by the Oracle herself. Consider each piece yours.